Welcome to Generative Age, a podcast that explores the rapidly evolving world of generative AI and its impact on education.
Guided by our expert facilitators, Alana Winnick and Dr. Cameron Faggio,
we speak with practitioners and thought leaders in education who are shaping the course of generative AI in the classroom.
Whether you're an educator, administrator, technology leader, or simply interested in the future of education, join us on this journey through the Generative Age, powered by NYSTCE,
the New York State Association for Computers and Technologies in Education. Join us as we explore the cutting edge of creativity and all the ways in which generative AI is changing the face of education. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us in the next session of the Generative Age, facilitated by Alana Winnick and Cameron Faggio. We are thrilled to have a special guest with us again tonight. And this series has really taken off as far as the discussion and the amount of people viewing the calls afterwards. And it seems like now this is all what everybody is talking about. So I really appreciate your time, especially now that the weather is nice, people are outside. I appreciate the time that you're putting into this because we are certainly all learning together. So with that being said, I'd like to turn this over to Alana and Cameron, and thank you all for being here.
Welcome to the Generative Age. So today I'm going to introduce Donnie earlier than I normally would because he's going to be a bit interactive in the beginning portion.
As we like to do with every Generative Age session, we'd like to get a sense of who's in the room and joining us tonight. While we're waiting for people to fill out the poll, there was a question about accessing the sessions. And like Lori noted, they are posted on the NYSTCE website, as well as all of our other different channels. Alana can...
If you want to watch them visually, then they're available on YouTube and Spotify, otherwise audio only on Google and Apple Podcasts. And it's really great if you can't make one, or if you love the content and you want to share it with a colleague. A lot of the great conversations are happening in the back channel. And I also do post the chat. If you are watching the recording, the chat is available for you. So anything that's shared in the chat, you will have access to as well. And we do use these to guide future sessions.
So tonight, what we'll do is we're going to do our usual landscape update. And then Donnie is going to walk us through AI in the classroom. We'll have a quick Q&A, followed by our breakout sessions. We'll do a wrap up and then follow up with some invitations to some upcoming sessions and different events that are going on.
All right. Like I said before, this time we're going to do things a bit differently. I'm going to introduce Donnie now because he's going to be engaging with us in the updates and resources. So I'm very excited to welcome Donnie Piercy. He's a fifth grade teacher. He is the author of the Google Cardboard book and upcoming the 50 strategies for using AI in the classroom. He's a keynote speaker. He has spoken on 5 continents and 33 states. He is a podcast host of 2 podcasts, Partial Credit and Teachers Passing Notes. He was the 2021 Kentucky Teacher of the Year, but don't let the nice Kentucky boy fool you because he's actually from Boston and he might be a Red Sox fan. So don't hate him for that. These are fun facts. I found this out yesterday. He can juggle flaming torches. And he's also a Mario Kart champion in a classroom of fifth graders. So those are just some fun facts about Donnie. And Donnie, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, it's great to be here. I met Alana a few years ago. I guess it would be like 2017, 2018. I was doing some work just out of the city. Alana was there. It's definitely nice to meet you then. And I look forward tonight. Cameron, I've never met you, but I've heard great things. So it's very nice to meet you as well. Looking forward to sharing a little bit about some of the ways that I've been using AI in the classroom this past year and share a few strategies from my upcoming book that's coming out later this summer.
Oh, yeah. Also, he was featured on Good Morning America. How did I forget that? When AI first came out and everyone was scared to use it, period, he was using it in his classroom with his students and then featured on Good Morning America. So look that up. We're just going to give you some updates on the landscape. With OpenAI, ChatGPT, they now have an iOS app. So only for iPhones, not for Androids. And in the first 6 days, there was 500,000 downloads. There's been much more since then, but there's been 500,000 in the first 6 days. So if you want to download that app and put it on your phone, you can have ChatGPT anytime, anywhere. Another update is that you can browse with Bing with the paid version. Last time we talked about this, it was only in the alpha, and now it's available if you have the paid version. But I will say it's not accurate. I asked it to write a bio about me, and it says I've been a board member for 5 years, which is not true. This is my first year. And it also says I worked at a public library, which is also not true. So just make sure you fact check. And the last thing, and I know Donnie's probably going to want to talk about this one, is you can now create a shareable link. So if you are typing with ChatGPT, you can get a shareable link to that prompt and response. And that's really great, especially to use in education.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So I guess the best way to describe like what the new ChatGPT feature is, where you can share a link to a conversation, is pretty akin to like sharing a Google Doc, where if you have like a template or a prompt that you use, that one, like if you want one of your coworkers to use, maybe it's like, hey, I found this great template for, creating like a book project assignment or some type of, some type of template for a chemistry thing that you're doing. Within 2 seconds, you can go ahead and share the link to it. So I can just like, I've got ChatGPT open behind the scenes right now. I can just say hello to everyone on this NiceGate call. All right, go ahead and type that in. Going to go ahead and do that. And then what's neat is once it's done, right, if I wanted to share this link with everybody, I could just quickly go ahead, grab it, press copy link. And then what this does, I'll just throw it into the chat, but I can go ahead and actually paste that link in there. And anyone who has the chat open, if you click that, it's almost like a template. So, I mean, I just asked to say hello, everybody on the call, but you know, you could do something where if you have like a choose your own adventure prompt that you used, if you have a, you're a music teacher and you figured out a prompt that will write, will take a book that you're reading and maybe summarize it and put it into some music with songs and chords, whatever, you could do that and share that with anybody. And then they have that then shared to their OpenAI, to their ChatGPT account. So definitely look really cool, like the ability to share a link through it.
Yeah, and also in New York State, it's not compliant with our data privacy and security laws mm-hmm. for students to log in. So I was talking to my 7th and 8th grade English teacher, and we really want to teach students about AI mm-hmm. and like hallucinations, just so that they're going to use AI, just to like teach them that they need to really check the facts. So because we can't encourage them to go try ChatGPT, what we could do is we could create the prompts and we could give each of them a link to analyze the responses and check for accuracies. Yep. So it's a good way for you to get students using it without actually asking them to use it.
Yep. And, you know, I'll share this when I talk in a little bit, but, you know, one of the it's very easy to, if it's in ChatGPT, to copy over like something that it makes into a Google Doc that you already have open with your students. And then that can be something where it's everybody with the link can view. And if you had them write something that you want them to make their own copy of, boom, just copy and paste a link directly into that Google Doc. Maybe you've got it shared through Google Classroom or Canvas, whatever learning management system that you use. And then they have access to that text.
Well, Donnie, nice segue, because the next update on the Google side is that now in Bard, you can actually export the responses directly into a Google Doc. So if you use Bard, it takes one step out of that process you just said. So that's a nice little update from Google. In Google Bard, you can also search the web from your response as well. And they're building into the lab's search generative experience, so you can use generative AI directly into the Google search experience.
Yeah, and it's not perfect yet. Like, this morning I was playing around in Bard. I asked it to search the web and write a summary of the NBA Finals game last night. And no matter how many times I tried it, no matter how many times I tweaked it, it went to last year's NBA Finals, where it just, you know, it said like, well, the Celtics beat the Warriors in game two. I said, no, that's not what happened. So definitely not perfect. But, you know, like I know you all have talked about before, just like with anything that you find on the internet, you have to go and make sure that you fact check everything that you find, especially if you know that it's something like AI that's still brand new, but it's writing all this stuff. And it's just generative. It's not a person on the other end who's spitting it out.
Yeah, it's like we have to teach our students media literacy, and now we have to teach them AI literacy as well.
Imagine that.
Yeah. And this is not generative AI, but it is about intelligence. And most of what we talk about is about artificial intelligence or human intelligence. So Neuralink is Elon Musk's company, and it was just FDA approved for their first clinical trials to implant computer chips in a human brain. And this will allow maybe potentially paralyzed people to walk again or blind people to see again. And I was just listening to the Huberman Lab podcast, and they had the neurosurgeon on from Neuralink, the head neurosurgeon. And they were talking about how AI could eventually be used. That's like in the next phase of it, to help these humans do things they weren't maybe ever able to do. So it's going to be interesting, the integrations between human intelligence and artificial intelligence.
Not only that, you know, my wife's a doctor, and she's talked a lot about how, you know, they expect within 5 to 10 years, like AI, I mean, a lot of times it's able to read and analyze, you know, symptoms. And it can tell you sometimes a lot faster than a human can, like, hey, we think this person probably has this. That doesn't mean it's accurate. Doctors, just like people, would need to fact check it. But I know as classroom teachers, a lot of times we look at, well, how will this benefit students? But like you've talked about, this is going to be something that students need to learn exists. So that way, when they go into their professions, once they're done with school, hey, what role is AI going to play in what they end up doing?
Another thing that I saw this week that I wanted to share is the Center for AI Safety. They put out a statement on AI risk. And this statement was signed by Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI, Bill Gates, who we all know and love, maybe not love, but we all know Bill Gates, and the CEO of Google DeepMind, which is their artificial intelligence section of Google, and Lex Fridman, who is really big in machine learning, and he's a research scientist at MIT, and he also has his own podcast. All four of those people, among many, many, many other people, signed this statement on AI risk that says, mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal scale risks, such as pandemics and nuclear war. They're making a bold statement such as that, that this is a global priority. So I think that that's just something that we should really reflect on and think about in the future of our world.
Who would have known that the 1980s classic War Games like was predicted this almost 40 years before AI really went public? Also Terminator. I mean, you get Skynet becoming self-aware is definitely something that we need to be aware of.
Good analogies. So here are just some resources. I like to share resources from all of you. This is a community. So if you ever find resources, please share them with me, and I'm happy to share them with everyone else. And if you have a new resource, please put it in the chat. There's this resource, monic.ai. Our friend Burge from ClassLink shared it with me, and it's helps you study. It helps a student or a learner. I'm also in school right now, so I am also learning. It can help me do test prep or study for exams. So it's designed for the learner, and I found it really interesting. So I just want to share that one. And there's, I think it's pronounced Diffit, and it creates leveled resources for any lesson within like seconds. And that was shared by my fifth grade teacher, Emma. So if you have a reading passage on whatever you're learning about, you can create all different types of levels, readings. And Donnie, I'm sure in a fifth grade classroom, you have students above grade level, below grade level, and something like this might help save you time if you were using in your classroom.
Yeah. I mean, anytime that a tool exists that can help teachers differentiate assignments, I mean, we're already done with our school year. Sorry to everybody who's still in. We finished a week ago, but we start in August, early August. I had 27 students in my class this year. They were not all on the same level in every subject: reading, social studies, writing, math. And any tools or any tech tools that exist that can help me differentiate assignments, and more importantly, give my students opportunities to showcase their creativity, but at a differentiated level that exists, I want to learn about those tools, especially if they're ones that can help save me time as a teacher.
So it's interesting. I actually watched this TED Talk before our last session, and I forgot to put it in the presentation. So I wanted to make sure I shared it there. Sal Khan did a TED Talk, How AI Could Save, Not Destroy Education. And in the end, he does talk about his own artificial intelligence, Khanmigo. But I think the beginning, the first 3 minutes, really give you a big insight into the future of what a world in AI can look like. And he specifically brings up Benjamin Bloom's Two Sigma problem. So I put a visual for you there. But for those of you that are not visually seeing this, basically by having a one-on-one tutor, it makes a child's learning go up by two standard deviations. So there's already data to prove that having a one-on-one tutor will significantly improve a child's learning, but we never could scale that because it was too expensive to provide every single child with a tutor. So by having an AI tutor, we can actually increase a child's learning and maybe close some of the learning gaps. So I really liked the first, particularly the first 3 minutes. So I really suggest that you check that out. And I put the link there for you as well. And I don't know if anyone saw the report that came out, but the U.S. Department of Education Office of Educational Technology came out with AI in the future of teaching and learning. There's a lot of really important information there. But I really love this humans in the loop. And what they emphasize to us is that if there's any critical instructional decisions or interpreting data, that there's always going to be a human teacher in control of those decisions. And I think that that's really important coming from the U.S. Department of Education. Also, if you're interested, on June 13th at 2:30 p.m., they are hosting their own webinar. So I put a link for you. I'm actually also in conversations with them about potentially having them on the generative age. So you might see someone from the U.S. Department of Education on here sharing insights with us as well.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time, right? I mean, Alana, when we were prepping for this call, we talked a lot about how, you know, I mean, AI has been around for years, whether it's like the predictive text that's on your phone, if you're, you know, if you're texting a coworker, or if you get that email and instead of typing out that long response, just clicking that button that says, thanks for letting me know. And it fills in that automatically for you. I mean, you know, but I think the big question or the analogy that I've really thought about, especially since ChatGPT launched in November, it's realizing that we're kind of at the Atari 2600. Right. You know, this is like the new thing. It's everywhere. People are talking about it. But recognizing, you know, 30 or almost 50 years after that launch, that, you know, this is only going to get better. You know, that this is only going to be something that, or this is going to be something that it's going to become even more and more prevalent. So asking that question of, well, how can we integrate this, these tools into our students? Where it's not just doing it for the sake of doing it. You know, I think like an example, like Google Glass or something that came out like 10 years ago. It was cool, but, you know, probably a little bit too ahead of its time. How can we go ahead and use these tools to really increase student learning, knowing that they're only going to get better and more prevalent?
All right. So tell us, if you're here live, tell us in the chat, how have you been using generative AI in your instruction? And now I'm going to hand it off to Donnie.
Hello, everybody. Alana, definitely thank you so much, and Cameron, for the invite on this week. You know, I've been teaching for the last 17 years. When people ask me, what has my experience been like using technology in the classroom? I mean, the first classroom I taught in 17 years ago still had a chalkboard in it. The year after that, I got a whiteboard. Then I got a, you know, with a vis-a-vis, the wet erase markers on there. Not too long after that, I got a real projector. Then I got one iPad. Then I got five iPads and a classroom set of iPads that I refused to give up and I wouldn't share. Got Chromebooks not too long after that. I've had, you know, grants for MacBooks and 3D and all this stuff, you know, in my classroom. But this AI stuff that has really, in the past 6 months, started to definitely make a very significant impact into education, has really started not just me, but I think every educator that's trying to stay on the front lines of all this stuff, like asking that big question, okay, so if this stuff exists, how can we as teachers still use this, right? How can we still, you know, what are some activities? What are some lessons? What are some strategies that we can use in our classrooms to still make sure that our students like have something to do when they're in there? So like Alana mentioned, you know, I do have a book coming out later this summer. I'll share the link and stuff at the end. But, you know, there are some things that I wanted to share that I feel like, you know, I need to mention, you know, good pedagogy regardless of the tools that exist, like it's still important. Like, maybe you've tried that lesson before. It's like, all right, today they're just going to be on their Chromebooks with no instruction for 60 minutes. And that just, you know, turns into YouTube short videos where nothing happens, right, for 90 minutes. So good pedagogy and learning how to integrate tools still matters. I hate the fact that it's almost become cliche by this point, but developing positive relationships with students and coming up with creative lessons to do that, that still matters, right? Alana, we were talking about this before the call too, but like read alouds with paper books, like that's still cool. I have a book that I read to that I've read to every fifth grade class or every class that I've ever had called Joey Pigs Will Swallow the Key. It's a first edition that I have from 1998. I've read it to every class. The thing is beat up beyond recognition, but it's still one of my favorite activities to do every single year with my class. We're talking, I feel like the newest thing in education, you know, especially if you're pretty active on social media, is like trying to, like with AI, it's trying to come up with like that perfect metaphor, like, well, AI is like the first time when blank. I mentioned the Atari 2600 analogy, but you know, that came out 7 years before I was born. Like to me, like when I first discovered ChatGPT, and I was fortunate, somebody just shared a link in November. This was like literally a week after it launched. And I started to immediately play it around with it. And I had the same experience. I kind of felt that same way when I first discovered YouTube for the first time. And I first discovered like just how easy it was to access information through Google for the first time. What I think is interesting about those two analogies is that if you think about like when Google first came out, there were so many people saying, oh no, we can never use this in schools. Same thing with YouTube. It was, you know, and I know like, again, I'll tell my students, we're not using YouTube today, but in a lot of schools, YouTube kind of has that same experience where, hey, at the first, like we're never gonna use this, you know, teachers can use this restrictively, but now it's definitely becoming something that a lot more students are recognizing it as a resource. But like with YouTube, like with Google, if students are not given active instructions, if they're not taught how to use those tools, then they'll just go on internet deep dives or go on those YouTube short videos, which, not going to lie, sometimes like we all just kind of mindlessly scroll through it. But making sure that we know how to use these tools and ChatGPT effectively, I feel like matters. Now, if you're on this call and you are brand new to ChatGPT or just AI in general, I've kind of learned that most educators, when they see it for the first time, go through a very similar experience. Like they'll say like, oh, it can answer questions for you. So a teacher will go, they'll find like an essay question or they'll find a passage, they'll copy it in and be like, it'll spit out the answer and they'll be like, all right, that's maybe like a B at best. And then someone will follow up them and say like, oh no, ask it to do this. And then, you know, AI does it in seconds. And then immediately it gets like, you know, that spit take coffee reaction. I need to figure out a way, you know, spit take, it's like in movies, you know, that whole thing. But again, I feel like that's something that is becoming more and more prevalent. Because of that, it is so important that we as educators start to ask ourselves like, okay, how can we develop lessons, whether it's something where students are seeing AI in action, or whether or not it's something that you use to do some lesson prep or you use to kind of get yourself ready for the day to develop a lesson. But the big question is, and this is me speaking as a classroom teacher, you know, and this is taken directly from my book, but there are four questions that I feel like as a teacher, you need to ask yourself. Because guess what? AI is cool, but just like with any tech tool, I don't think that you should be using it just for the sake of using it. So if you want to start to integrate AI into what you do, I like to say that there's four big questions to ask yourself. You know, one, what are some learning targets, goals, or objectives, and how can AI help me assist that? Just like with any good lesson plan, what prior knowledge do my students have, and can AI help me actually identify any learning gaps that go along with that activity? As the students are learning, can AI help me monitor students' progress? And you know, more importantly, lastly, as the classroom teacher, yeah, we still have those big projects. We still have those cumulative assignments. And sometimes it's that big statewide test, but a lot of times it might just be that quick formative assessment where you've given the students like a quick prompt at the end of class. So in what ways can AI help you very quickly formatively assess your students? So that way, one, you can save time, but more importantly, you can, kind of figure out where your class is when it comes to mastering content. Now, I know a lot of you have been, one of the reasons why Alana asked me to come on this call is to just share what are some practical classroom strategies that you can do as a classroom teacher. And I wanted to start off with a fun one. I grew up in New England and I live in Kentucky now, and I'm an elementary school teacher. So we have, it's the bane of my existence. But my first classroom strategy that I wanted to share was using AI, but not ChatGPT. It's something that I like to call guess the prompt, right? And again, we're going to look at this as an indoor recess strategy because it is the bane of my existence, having indoor recess. But just for something fun off the bat, I did not use ChatGPT, although that is coming with supposedly with ChatGPT for image generation. I used DALL-E, which is an image generator, and also Midjourney to come up with these images. But the question is, what prompts did I use to come up with these images? So you got the first one here. And Alana, I don't think I've shown you these. So if you or Cameron wanted to make some stabs at what you think this was.
Or let's ask the audience in the chat.
Oh, yeah, the crowd, anybody that's in the chat.
Yeah. What do you think the prompt was?
Yeah, you can unmute. You can do it that way. You can throw it in the chat. But I can tell you, I threw something and I used DALL-E for this one. And it created this image. But what prompt do you think was entered? And Cameron, I know you have not seen these. So if you wanted to make a guess too. A suited and caped man using chemicals in nature. It's actually you're not too far from that one. So for this one, again, I live in Kentucky, so I had to do this one. This is what appeared. I asked it to create. Oh, Cameron, not too bad, not too far there. It was a supervillain who lives in Kentucky. Threw that out, and it created this cartoonish image. All right, let's do one more. Just for fun. So magical to want to be busted. Whatever. All right, here we go. So here's another one that prompted. This was another prompt. It created this image. And it is scary, by the way, if you've never played around with some image generation AI, just like with ChatGPT, you just throw a prompt in and it creates the images for you in a matter of seconds. So I threw a prompt in. It created this. So what prompt do you think I asked?
For those of you that I can't see this right now, it's two men and a baby and a woman wearing hats with their eyes wide open and their mouths open, and two gerbils, I think, with their eyes and mouths wide open.
Two somethings. They're staring. Looks like
hamster, a gerbil. I'm not sure what it is.
People in the background, they've got kind of shocked faces. It does, Mary Beth. It does look like a Chris Van Allsburg picture. One of his favorite books of mine is The Garden of Abdul Ghazi. I mean, people love The Polar Express. They love Jumanji. But his first book, Garden of Abdul Ghazi, great twist at the end. Guinea Pig Gallery, guesses Tracy. But for this one, I asked it to come up with two large hamsters watching the Kentucky Derby. Why not? And then we'll do one more here. This one is flat out ridiculous, but it made me laugh. I just got an idea in my head. I will give you a hint. I did ask it to write something. So for those of you that are listening on this later, there's some sort of, looks like a dinosaur of some kind with sharp teeth wearing like a suit, standing in front of some kind of automobile behind it. Cameron has guessed a dinosaur butler in the Gilded Age. Gangster dinosaur. All right. Do like a little Goodfellas maybe going on there, Christine. But for this one, I had a little fun. I asked it to suave dino in an alley doing business. Lori guesses. No. Oh, Jurassic chauffeur, Laura.
Oh, that was a good guess, Laura.
So this one, I said, a Jurassic Park where the dinosaurs park cars instead of being in an actual park. And it created that image for me. So I just rolled with it, right? But anyway, so a lot of fun that you can do with this. Again, just a simple indoor recess activity. It's also something where you can, you know, if you're a STEM teacher and you're trying to teach your students like how to generate the right prompt, you could have them submit prompts to you through a Google form and see like, okay, which one of these do we actually think will create the image? So there's definitely some STEM, definitely some computer science, or if you're a computer teacher, you're trying to show students and demonstrate some of the power of AI, lots of different things there. Christine has asked, how do you come up with these crazy prompts? I'm a fifth grade teacher and I've been doing it for 17 years and I got three kids of my own. So just rolled it that way.
You can also ask ChatGPT to come up with the crazy prompts and then take those prompts and put in DALL-E or Midjourney and get the pictures. So you are not as creative as Donnie is. You can use an AI for that as well.
Yeah. But, you know, what I wanted to talk about next, right? That was just some fun stuff at the start. Like, what are some ways that you can do it? And by the way, when you do this in your class, those are three images that I did with my class this year. They get into it. They will talk, they will shout. Maybe this is even just like a start of the day activity that you do, maybe part of their morning work, maybe just, you know, I like to think of it as low stress questions just to get your students talking before you begin the actual lesson. But, you know, definitely something fun that you can do. But what I wanted to share here, Tim in the chat has mentioned Adobe Firefly, which is another AI image generator thing. I think it's an open beta, but you can still apply to get into it. And they're usually pretty quick about that. Christine has asked, do you ask them to guess the prompt? You ask them to do something with the image. Christine, that's a great question. I've not done this, but I know that there have been some teachers who have. They'll come up, you know, you can come up with a prompt, maybe something like, I'm just trying to think on the fly, like a squirrel on a raft in the middle of the ocean. You can create that prompt and then put that up on the board. And just as a quick little creative writing activity, you can ask your students, all right, we're going to write for the next 20 minutes. Now tell this story. Or even better, if you're an elementary school, middle school teacher, maybe you have students submit prompt ideas to you, do that through a Google form. And then each day you just pick one and have it generate that image. And then you could have your class do a creative writing prompt just based off of, you know, something that they've submitted. So definitely lots of ways that you could use it, right? But the two big or the three big image generator apps that exist right now, I use Midjourney and DALL-E. But there's also Adobe Firefly, and there's other ones that exist as well. But I like how Tim said, like, just ask ChatGPT, just come up with some that way, and you can kind of roll with it. But anyway, so what I wanted to share next was just five quick classroom ideas that you could try. Again, I'm a fifth grade teacher, but I am also a school technology coordinator, which means that, you know, I joke, I have two jobs and one paycheck, but it means that I also get to work with students kindergarten all the way up really through high school. And so as part of that experience, like I am often asked like, hey, I'm a 10th grade science teacher. Can you give me some ways that I could use this tool? Or do you have any suggestions? And one of my favorite ones that I've come up with, and I've had some middle school teachers that have tried this, is they do what's called on the fly science. And this one is actually in my book that's coming out this summer too. The idea behind the activity, the idea behind the lesson is, you know, you pick beforehand the content strand that you're trying to teach. Maybe it's, you know, you're a science teacher and you're teaching like Newton's second law of motion. Maybe you are trying to teach them about different chemical properties, like how does mitosis work or something like that. But you have the students tell them, hey, tomorrow, I just want you to bring something that fits inside your backpack. And for some students, it just might be a pencil. some students, it might be like a Matchbox car or, you know, a little metal car. I still like Micro Machines. Anybody else remember Micro Machines? Those are totally cool back in like 1991. You know, you just have the students bring stuff to school, or maybe just go into your supply closet and just start pulling stuff out. And then you do this prompt right here. You just say like, hey, in my classroom, I have hundreds of pencils, crayons, markers, plastic wheels, whatever the students brought. And then you ask it to come up with a lesson that I could do in one day using those materials to help my, again, pick your grade level, understand whatever standard is that you're trying to teach. And then when you go into ChatGPT and you copy that in, right? And you copy that in, you press enter. What it's then going to do within seconds, it'll create that lesson plan for you using those materials solely based off of the materials that you have, right? And kind of the fun behind it is the students, like if they are the ones who are bringing this class to school, these materials to school, they then know, again, if you're a pretty tech savvy teacher, in theory, you could also do this the day that you teach it. But if you're like, yeah, I kind of, you know, want to collect the materials and then have AI write the lesson plan and we do it the next day. One, the students feel like they were able to contribute to the lesson. And two, it definitely, you know, shows the students some positive uses of AI. But more importantly, you're teaching the standards, right? You're using the things that you have to teach the different standards, objectives, content, whatever it is that you're teaching. So looks like for this one that it wrote together, you know, begin asking some questions, just through some off ones on there. And it looks like for this activity, they turn it into a small group activity, give the students this, 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 and this, and then it walks them through step by step what to do. Now, here's the nice part. If you're reading through it and you're like, this is garbage, you could just very simply, again, I'm guessing most people in here have played around with ChatGPT before. You can just do a follow-up and say, hey, come up with another three lesson ideas using the same materials. Boom. And then it'll take those same materials and it'll give you three or four other suggestions that you could do, right? That's the important thing to remember about ChatGPT. And Bard is the same way too. Like when you have these conversations going, if you don't like what it spits out, you're like, that really doesn't connect, or that isn't what I was looking for, just tell it to fix the thing, right? Or if you're like, oh, I had a student who brought in some Bunsen burners. Cool. I don't know why a student would bring in Bunsen burners. That just kind of popped in there. But you could say, hey, like, can you incorporate this as well? And then it'll go ahead and write out the rest of that lesson plan for you, right? All right. So simple idea, but definitely something that you could bring into your instruction. Now, as a fifth grade teacher, right, the next activity, just an idea that you could do with AI, as students, like one of the biggest lessons that I wish that I learned in school, right? Every teacher has that, oh, I wish I learned how to do this in school. For me, it was public speaking. Like I used to be super shy. I used to be somebody who, if somebody handed me a microphone, I would hold it down here and just feel like, y'all don't need me to hold this, right? And I never really got any practice standing up in front of others. And if a teacher asked me to memorize a speech, which again, I do think there is some benefit to that, memorizing poetry. I do love that kind of stuff. If you've got a group of students who are really hesitant about speaking, what better way to do it than to take a famous scene, a quote, or something from a movie that they already know and have some fun with it. So simple example, right? I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to copy this text right here. And Alana, you said that you'll be able to get them some of these resources afterwards, right?
Oh, so yeah, this whole resource is available to them.
Yep. So I'm just going to go ahead here and I'm going to say, rewrite this speech from. And I was born in the 80s. So one of my favorite movies came out in 1996, the movie Independence Day. So I'm going to say, rewrite the speech from Independence Day, but imagine it was written by, you could choose anybody here. Because I know it kind of spits out a fun response, I'm going to say, imagine it was given by Yoda in Star Wars, right? Now, the nice part is I've already got the text of the speech copied right here. I'm going to go ahead and copy all of that, hop into ChatGPT. I'm going to erase that part right there, paste that in, and I'm just going to press enter. And it's
I have an idea. Why don't you get the shareable link to this and we can put it in the slideshow? Look at that, using all our tools.
So boom, I can go ahead and grab that link. But again, the nice part behind it, right, is now I've got the speech. It's written like Yoda, and I love how it even incorporated the, I can't do a Yoda impression, but I'm not Frank Oz, but I love how it incorporates that in there. But the students, they could do it like anybody. If you're like, hey, make it sound like Mr. Beast is giving this speech. Whatever it is that you wanted to do, the students, if they have a favorite, Mickey Mouse, whoever, Donald Duck, anybody. But again, if they choose it and if they have the speech from a movie that they want to give, again, I teach elementary school, so we probably won't be doing Pulp Fiction, but you know, you get the idea behind it. It's something that they have a voice in, makes it kind of fun. And now the students have a personalized thing that they can go ahead and stand up and give. And I love how it says, without a fight, we will not vanish. And now illustrate with Dolly. Tim just threw that in the chat, right? You could say like, hey, now imagine that Yoda was giving the speech at the end of the movie Independence Day. I'd love to see what pops up. I may do that actually after, when you guys are in some of your breakout rooms, because I want to see what appears. Next idea, right? And I know some of you might have seen, there's already somebody actually used ChatGPT to create an app that does this. But you know, you can also use ChatGPT to have your students interact with historical figures. Now, as an elementary school teacher, you know, my students do not have access to ChatGPT, but my district has given me permission to, hey, you can show them how it works. You can model it for them. So the way that I go about doing it, right? The idea is pretend that you are blank. So I'm just going to jump here. I'm going to take this prompt. Let me zoom out here. Pretend that you are, let's go Teddy Roosevelt. And then it's, you know, the rest of the prompt says, hey, wait for the students to ask you some questions, but answer in a way that I'll take fifth grade students would understand, as they're going to be the ones that are asking you the questions. I'm going to I'll switch over to GPT-4 for this one, right? So type that in there. And now it just says it's going to take on the role of the 26th president of the United States. Now, there's a few ways you could do this. One, you could have this up on your board. You could have this maybe at the back of the room. At the back of the room, you've got like a desktop set up or a MacBook set up, or maybe it's on like your big ViewSonic board or smart board, and the students could go over and type in some questions. Maybe you're back there monitoring it. But now the students have the opportunity to ask these questions. Roseanne in the chat just asked a question. She said, what's the difference with ChatGPT-4? So ChatGPT-3, right, which if you make an OpenAI account, that's the one that you'll have access to. It's fine, right? It works. GPT-4, the way that OpenAI described it, it's 500 times more powerful. And it also, it's where they push out a lot of their updates. So like now they have plugins, now it can search the internet, all that stuff, but they intentionally slow it down a little bit so it doesn't like quickly spit out. So for this one, we can ask this any questions like, what was your, maybe a question about the national parks.
While you're typing, the technical term for that is called a parameter, just for anyone that wants to learn the technical terminology. It has a lot more parameters that it was trained on, which means the model was trained on larger sets of data. So hopefully it might fine-tune the responses for you a bit more. But it is a lot slower. I compare it to like dial-up internet versus wireless. Let's look at Donnie's response.
All right. So I asked, why did you start the national parks? Well, young one, I strongly believe in preserving the national beauty of our great country, blah, 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 walks through it. But you get the basic idea. Maybe you could have some fun with this. And if on the back of the room, if you've got the chatbot loaded up to Teddy Roosevelt, maybe like, I don't know, George Washington, whatever it is, maybe you've print out a little a printable head of that person, whoever it is that day. You can put it right next to the webcam and the students know that's who they're talking about. Tim, did he live in Long Island? Like for real? Did I just learn a new fact? I don't think I knew that TR lived there, but learning new things every day. There you go. I'll tell you what, once we're all done, I'll take this chat and I'll throw it in there because I didn't know that. Learned something new. Something that I've done with my students too. And again, this is just another quick little model here of some way you can just kind of a way to get students interactive, also getting them up and talking, and definitely a lot of fun. An activity, and this is in my book. This is what's called, I call it playwriting, P-L-A-I. It's a terrible dad joke, sorry, but I'm just going to roll with it. But the idea behind it is you have your students perform on the fly classroom plays. So there's a few ways you can do this, right? I've got a prompt that I've come up with, and you're more than welcome to steal this. But the prompt just simply says, write the script for the first scene of a 3-scene play. And there'll be 4 students named. I'll just pick some people in the chat. Tim, we'll go Lori, and Alana, and Cameron. The play will be taking place, I don't know, let's go in a 9th grade classroom with a teacher named, let's go Mr. Schmatz. And then it'll have a theme of, I don't know, just thinking on the fly here, friendship. Then the rest of the prompt says, make sure that throughout the play, the main characters make lots of references to this theme, or really whatever, standard you want them to focus on. But the nice part is you have the students volunteer. Hey, who wants to be in the play? You write their names in. You press enter, and then boom, it goes ahead and it writes the scripts. And then the fun part about this, there's a few things. You could either A, just put this up on your screen and have the students perform the play live, right? And remember, it's only writing the first act of it. So maybe after it's done, you could say, now write scene 2. But let's say Oscar the Grouch. I don't know, why not? We'll just have some fun there, right? But now it goes ahead and it writes scene 2 and Oscar the Grouch, what are you doing here, right? But again, there's a few things that you could do with this. Once the play is written, you could go ahead and copy all this text. Google Bard will do this too. You can go ahead and copy all this text, throw it into a Google Doc that maybe you put in Google Classroom, give all your students their own copy of it and say like, all right, well, I want you to make some changes to this. Maybe you ask them, hey, here's the first 2 scenes. Now write the final scene where you have to write up or kind of bring this play to a conclusion. A lot of fun. My students love this activity because one, it gets them up, but a lot of times they can be really silly with it too. But at the end of it, when you share the text with them and give them their chance to tweak it, to change it, to have some fun with it, that's really where they can personalize it. And they love the fact that like, this is never, you know, this play with Oscar the Grouch with all these people has never been written before, right? They love the fact that they're performing something fresh for the first time. Last idea, and I know we're running a little short on time, so I don't want to, we don't necessarily need to model this one, but you know, as a teacher, if you're a high school teacher, you're trying to teach your students how to debate. And a lot of times they might have a difficult time seeing the other side of an argument, right? Maybe they're really bent on, oh, it's so important. Everybody needs to have solar panels, right? And they want, you know, everybody should just have them on their roofs, but they might not think like, well, what are some reasons why somebody who doesn't think that's a good idea? What are some reasons why they might not think that? So you could say like, hey, I'm a 10th grade student participating in a debate on blank. Give me 3 points and counterpoints to help you prepare, right? So that'll give you both of those, can really help you debate. And again, it doesn't tell you what to say, but as a student, or maybe you're working with a group of students to help them prepare for this. All right, so most of these ideas that are actually like in my book, and I know, it comes out later this summer. You can scan that QR code right now if you want, but it'll be out later this summer. And really, when I wrote this book, when I was asked to write this book by Teacher Created Materials, you know, they knew that I was a classroom teacher. I still am. 10 years left till I can retire. They knew that I was a classroom teacher. They knew that I was actively doing this stuff. So I wanted to make sure that everything in there was either A, something that I've done with my students, or B, something that I know that I've seen that trusted educators have done with classes to help them either save time by coming up with lesson plans or ideas or sub plans or any of that, but more importantly, to help benefit the lives of the students that they work with every day through using AI. Whew. All right.
We just want to say thank you so much, Donnie. That was absolutely incredible. You are awesome. I think you just gave so many people so many ideas. Becca wants to know, what are the grade ranges of ideas in your book?
Yep. So Becca, the way that the book is written, there's a general idea, I'm trying to think of one on the fly here. Like, let's take the on the fly science lesson, but then they break it down into grade levels. So if you are a pre-K through fifth grade teacher, how could you use this idea? What are some prompts that you could do with that? If you're a middle school teacher, what's some ways that you could use this? And if you are a high school teacher, what are some ways that you could use this idea? And there's lots of suggested prompts, which you're more than welcome to copy over. We are going to have everything posted online too, like through a link that's in the book, so that way you don't have to type them out. You just copy and paste them to kind of tweak them for yourself. But
does anyone else have any questions for Donnie? And also, we would love your big takeaways. Like, what was the biggest thing that you took away from this session that you're so excited to go and try? Because we want to know what your highlights were. What is the weirdest thing that ChatGPT has given you so far, Donnie? That's a question from the chat.
Oh, the weirdest thing. Oh, gosh. I'm literally scrolling through. So in ChatGPT, it gives you like a search history. I'm looking through to see. I know I've had some strange ones. So, I'll have to go back and dig through it. But one activity that I've done, Lori, with my students is we had a prompt, and the original prompt was write a really boring story that takes place in a fifth grade classroom named with Mr. Pierce, you know, with students in Mr. Pierce's class. And it was just a lame, like one paragraph thing. And then what I told the students to do about once a week, I had them submit ideas about what should happen next, what should be added to the story. And so what we ended up doing was for about a month on end, like, and these students were adding everything. Like they'd say like, all right, now add NSYNC. Now add, I had a student who loved the 1980s this year in my class. She's like, oh, add Doc Brown and Marty McFly from Back to the Future. And by the end of it, it was this absolutely bonkers story, but they loved the fact that this was a story that they created through their wild ideas. It was strange. A lot of times with this AI stuff, sometimes what it spits out is weird. And you just kind of have to figure out like, all right, maybe that wasn't the prompt that I needed, or, you know, just something fun to play around with.
Any last questions for Donnie? Lots of big takeaways. I like them. And for those of you that are listening, the chat is available on the first slide. So when I post the link to the resources on the first slide is a link to the chat. So now's the time for the breakouts. The next session is actually live from ISTE, which is really exciting. It's tentatively scheduled for Sunday, June 25th at 4 p.m. I will confirm that with you. I have we have the registration link. So if you do register, right now it's scheduled for Sunday, June 25th, 4 p.m. And if you register, we will notify you if it changes. I also put a link to join my mailing list, which you can find on my website, alanawinnick.com, join my mailing list. And I'll personally email you if it changes. I promise you I'll let you know. That session will feature Carl Hooker. So he recently wrote a book, Ready, Set, Fail. He's also a really great friend to NiceGate. We have him at every annual conference. In particular, this book, Ready, Set, Fail, it focuses on risk-taking. And I think that in a world of generative AI, which is new for everyone, we all have to take risks. So that session is going to really focus on risk-taking and learning and growing from making mistakes. So I'm really excited about that one. Make sure you register for that, registration.generativeage.com. We have some upcoming sessions. So I've been holding this one in, Donnie. I spoke to Ken Shelton today. He says hello.
Oh, hi, Ken.
Yeah, so I spoke to Ken today. He says hi. He said, you guys go way back. He's agreed to come on to discuss bias and AI discrimination, which is a very important topic. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's not scheduled yet, but keep an eye out for that. I also privately messaged John Spencer, and he said he's willing to come on as well. And I'm in communication with the U.S. Department of Education to potentially get Christina Ishmael on. And I'm also messaging Alex Cotran from AIEDU. So I'm going to turn this to you guys. If you have any ideas for guests, please let me know and I will get them on. So email me, find me on Twitter, contact me, give me your ideas, and I will get them on the show. And I put a link to my mailing list. So if anything changes with the Carl Hooker episode, I will personally email you and I will let you know. And if you're listening, just go to alanawinnick.com and right at the top, it says join my mailing list. If you're registered on registration.generativeage.com, that's through NiceGate. NiceGate will email you as well if anything changes. And like I said, we need you to help us find sessions. This is all shaped around your needs and wants. So please let us know what you need. And thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening, if you're listening. And a big thank you to NiceGate for powering and sponsoring these, because we couldn't do any of this without you, NiceGate. So thank you, NiceGate. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Generative Age, powered by NiceGate.
We want to remind you that you can join us during the live recordings of these conversations and engage with like-minded colleagues. This is a great opportunity to ask questions, participate in back-channel discussions, and engage in breakout room activities to further your understanding of the topics we discussed.
Stay informed about the latest developments in AI and education by following us on social media at @generative_age. Join us next time for another exciting conversation. Until then, keep learning and keep growing in the generative age.